This is Spiritual Principles for Emotional Healing with Dr. Denise Johnson, a show dedicated to the integration of spirituality, faith, mental health, and emotional wellness. I believe where your spirit leads, your emotions, power, and destiny will follow. Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Spiritual Principles for Emotional Healing, and I am your host, Christian emotional wellness expert and licensed mental health professional, Dr. Denise Johnson.
I would like to caution you about today's topic because it may not be suitable for children.
And the very important topic for today's show is intimacy is a woman's birthright. Creating a loving and emotionally intimate relationship with oneself and enjoying shameless sex. And my innovative and revolutionary guest is Rena Martin. Rena Martin was a deputy district attorney for the LA County DA's office for 14 years, where she spent the majority of her career prosecuting cases of sexual assault, domestic violence, and child abuse. She continues to serve women today as both a certified women's intimacy coach and educator with a mission to help women love their bodies, experience deep intimacy, and have great sex shame-free. She educates hundreds of women per month on several virtual wellness platforms on a variety of topics pertaining to sex, intimacy, and relationships. Her signature shameless coaching program has transformed the lives of dozens of women and counting by helping them liberate themselves from shame and discover deeper intimacy. Well, Ms. Rena, it is my absolute joy and pleasure to have you as a guest on the show today, and I want to thank you for the openness of your heart to be here.
It is my pleasure, Dr. Denise. I'm so happy to be here.
Me too.
Because what I saw working sex crimes is that juries, they love to convict in cases where the two people do not know each other. So, you know, your stereotypical man in a ski mask grabs a woman off the street.
Right.
Oh, yes.
Right.
We want to
put
the boogeyman away. But if it's a family member, if it's a teacher, if it's somebody in a position of trust or authority, juries don't want to believe that this is the world they live in because it threatens their own sense of safety. So it is so problematic. And it sounds to me like you have a unique insight into that as well. And I think we're on the same page here. I don't know what the solution is, Dr. Denise, but something's broken.
I know. It is. It is. And, you know, people don't understand that children, right, there's such a thing called the sexual abuse accommodation syndrome. Little children typically recant because they can't stand up under the pressure of the systemic involvement around, the sexual abuse, the sexual assault. It's just, I mean, and we see this all the time, all the time. And that usually is the very thing, besides the fact if it was a type of sex crime where there was no penetration and they can't, when they had the medical exam, they can't get any data to support it. Without those two things, they usually just don't believe the child.
So it's
just horrible.
Typically, the only tool that that we have is a confession at that point, or a surreptitious, what we call a pretext phone call, where the child is now a bit older and calls the abuser, and this is all orchestrated by law enforcement, and it's recorded, and they call the abuser and say, "Look, I'm just trying to work through this. I just want an apology," and so that, or just a straight confession, which are very rare. Those tend to be really what we need in these kinds of cases, where disclosure isn't made right away.
Right. And so I guess, you know, to speak to your question about, you know, like, I guess what can we do? I guess if the legal system can't
prosecute and protect. I guess the only other thing would be for private citizens to understand if there has been an allegation of sexual abuse, the child needs to be protected, whether or not the law has put the person away or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
somebody, the mother, the grandmother, you know, whomever is responsible for the child needs to either stop their contact with the alleged perpetrator or really supervise it 24/7 so that there is no context for the perpetrator to continue this with the child. But
Absolutely.
People don't want to do that either for the same reasons, because they just can't believe it
right.
most of the time. But
and, you know, now yeah. I'm seeing the consequences with women who decades later, maybe they never even told their family that
right.
this had happened. The police were
right.
never involved. That's
right.
part of it, too, is that there is an inherent shame in sharing that.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, shame lives in the shadows. And Dr. Brené Brown says, if you can share your story with somebody who responds with empathy and understanding, then shame cannot survive. But for so many people, just talking about it is
yes.
is an act of, is shameful. So
yes.
it's so much intertwined with one another, and it's devastating how many women I work with now who have early history of abuse
right.
and how it still impacts their intimacy today.
Yes. Every aspect of their life. Every aspect.
Mm-hmm.
All right, then
yeah.
how specifically did you start your coaching business? Like, how did you begin that?
Well, I like to say I didn't decide, that the business kind of decided for me. While I was getting my coaching certification, there's a number of hours that you have to complete, and
okay.
typically those are done with other people within your program. And by the time I finished my certification, I had about four times as many hours as I needed, because women
wow.
within my program knew that this was the area I was focusing in, and they came to me, "Hey, Rena, do you need some practice hours? Because I would
wow.
like to talk to you about sex and intimacy."
Wow.
And so
okay.
It started there, and
wow.
then I realized women were really hungry for this. And then I created
yes.
a flagship program, rather than just saying, okay, you can coach with me indefinitely, much
right.
much like the therapy model, right? Like, there's no finite
right.
end date. I created a flagship program so that we can get you from point A to point B. I started seeing clients while I was working as a DA. So I
wow.
would see clients, and this is all virtually. I see all my clients virtually,
okay.
and I would see them during my lunch break or in the evenings. And at the time, I was working with a team of business advisors, and my advisor said to me, "What more proof do you need, Rena, that this
right.
is viable for you?" And so...
Right.
Because I need to sleep too, and I was working two jobs, and so, but you've got to understand, this was a career in the DA's office that I had been in since my 20s, and
yes.
it's the only
yes.
adult career I'd ever had, and it was
right.
so stable and great benefits.
Yes.
I'd never had to
yes.
worry about how to buy my own health insurance or any of
right.
these things.
Right.
So I made the leap. It was the scariest thing I've ever done. I've done quite a few scary things in my life. but how did I decide? The decision was made because there are only 24 hours in the day, and
yeah.
I couldn't create any more hours. And so I thought, okay, how can I best serve people and change people's lives, and how can I reach more of them? So that's
yes.
what I'm doing now. And I'm fortunate to say that my business is thriving, and I'm
wonderful.
Able to reach so many women, and it is the most rewarding work I've ever done, because justice
is
no longer in the hands of
yes.
the system or juries.
Yes.
We've cut out the middleman, and
right.
we can just work on the healing now.
I love that. I love that. So in terms of your program, like, how many sessions is it, and can you give us just a general idea of what you cover and in it?
Sure. Yeah, so it's an 8-week program. We
okay.
meet individually once a week for those 8 weeks. There's a significant amount of work that they are doing in between our sessions.
Okay.
It follows a structure for a reason. And then their work is submitted to me. I'm able to look it over. We do quite a bit of subconscious work because we now know that 95% of our emotional operating system stems from our subconscious. So we really go in and dig through some of that and figure out, when did these beliefs start? When did this belief, you know, I have to stay small to stay safe, when did that start? If that's the case, you know, for because I hear that as one thing that comes up very often for women. When did these start? And so we do some subconscious work. We do some somatic work. And then we do some soul searching, which is giving women permission to ask themselves the questions they've never even thought to ask about what they want in the bedroom, what they want in a relationship, what they want in life. And really by the time they're done, we've worked through the mind, the body, and the soul to where they know exactly who they are and what they want. So my approach is holistic. Some people think, okay, are we just going to sit around and talk about sex for 8 weeks? No, that is not what we do.
Right.
Because here's the thing is that if you can heal your intimacy, which for most women is the most hidden, shameful part of who you are, if you can go in and work on that and empower yourself there, it changes your whole life, right?
So I
say, you know, your path to empowerment starts in the bedroom because that's the easiest way to hack everything is going in at the in the very darkest part of you and working on that. And the good news is we can do that in a short period of time. It just has to be done with surgeon-like precision. And and now I've had over 50 women who have enrolled in my program. And and so I've seen the results. And
excellent.
And it works. That's all I can say is that it works. But hopefully that answered your questions about about how the program is structured.
Yes, it does. Oh, thank you so much. So then what types of things interfere with a woman's ability to be loving and emotionally intimate with herself and contribute to her not fully enjoying the gift of sex? What would you say you see repeatedly?
Well, shame. Shame is at the core of everything, and which is why my program is actually called Shameless. But
I
like
that
to
name.
See this.
I love it.
we have this, I think of it as like a pyramid, and you can't have intimacy without vulnerability.
Yes.
And vulnerability is really hard for us. Because I have yet to work with a woman who doesn't suffer from perfectionism. And if you are a perfectionist, by definition, you are shielding yourself from vulnerability. And if you can't be vulnerable, you can't have intimacy. So, but at the root of all of this is this underlying belief that I don't deserve to be happy. My needs don't matter as much as other people's needs. And that's shame, right? That is, I am not enough. I'm not worthy. And so, and for every woman, that's going to be unique. It can be, I'm not worthy because I was abused. My body is broken, right? I'm not worthy because my religious upbringing told me that there was something wrong with me. There's something defective in me if I don't want the kind of heteronormative, monogamous, vanilla sex that I'm being told is the kind of thing I should want. And and so it can come from so many places, but really, and for some women, it's simply not knowing. You know, some women say, no one ever taught me about sex. I don't know about toys. I don't know. I've never had an orgasm. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. So it can come from so many places, but really the core of it all is shame. Like there's something wrong with me that I don't know how to do this. And I say to people, no one's teaching us how to do this. You know, comprehensive sex education in America is laughable. And so our parents, our families of origin tend to be our first source of education when it comes to what a relationship is supposed to look like. And for a lot of us, we're not getting great modeling.
I know, it's true.
So
it's true.
You know, and we all want to be loved. We all want to connect, and no one's teaching us how to do this thing, and it's devastating.
It is.
And I've worked with women all the way up to their 50s and 60s who've invested in themselves before. They've gone to therapy. They've been working on themselves, and they still haven't been able to figure it out. And the paradox here is they say, I must be really broken if I've spent 10 years in therapy and I still can't figure it out. So the self-help itself ends up being an additional layer of shame. Like, wow, this doesn't even work on me. And it's also because we're being fed a narrative that therapy is the be-all, end-all in healing. And it is a powerful component of it.
I agree.
But it's not everything, right?
I agree. Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
That becomes more shame on top of it. Like, wow, what is wrong with me? I've tried everything.
Yes.
And still nothing's working.
I agree.
So
I agree.
Shame. Shame is the short answer to
shame.
Your question.
Shame, shame. And you know, the other thing I'm thinking is that, you know, with the advent of the internet and, you know, the way the culture is going in terms of, you know, you can get an app and get 6 dates and have sex with 6 people during the day, if you've got that kind of energy. I had just noticed that young people, or I guess older people too, you know, sex has become a commodity. You know, people are disposable. Nobody takes the time to get to know the person. It's like people are body parts and interchangeable. It's really frightening to me to see what the younger people's concept is about intimacy and sex and all of those things.
It's fascinating. So I teach a class called Love and Sex Across Generations. And you're absolutely right that sexuality has really changed in the younger generations. Hookup culture is definitely prevalent, but the younger folks are having less sex than their parents were having at their age.
Wow.
Which is fascinating. And they're partnering up much later. So whereas our parents would partner up and then get their lives in order, their careers in order, build their life.
Yes.
The younger generation is saying, you know, oh, no, I'm going to wait until I have my career and everything else in order before I even start looking for a mate.
Yeah.
So, but we still have sexual needs. And so they're going out and having no strings attached relationships because they don't want anything to interfere with their career that they're attempting to build. So in a way, I think that there's a bit more going on in addition to just that people are disposable. There's something bigger happening. But I will point out that this idea of being disposable and that people can get laid off, you know, very quickly, that life is very fleeting, that when you do find your person, that love and our primary relationship has taken on such a different meaning now than it had, you know, even 100 years ago or 50 years ago, that we are seeking everything. We're seeking spiritual enlightenment. We're seeking a best friend. We're seeking a lover in our partner now. And in a world that is so disposable, to have somebody say, I choose you too, makes our relationships all the more important. So then when there is a betrayal, when there is infidelity, that kind of thing, it's an assault on who we are as people and our worthiness. So I also see a lot of women coming to me who've experienced the trauma of loss, of breakup, like that rejection, because it's no longer just, well, he broke up with me. It's, I was told that I am not this special, unique person that I thought I was, right?
Right. Oh, yes. You're so right. You're so right. So then let me ask, what are the 13 building blocks of a healthy sex life? You know, I'm so excited. I can't wait for you to tell me what some of these are.
So these 13 building blocks are derived from research conducted by John Gottman, who I like to say is the godfather of the science behind sex and relationships. And so he's been studying couples over the past 4 decades. And he realized that great sex isn't rocket science, that couples who have great sex anywhere on the planet are doing the same 13 things.
Okay.
And these are the 13 things. So
yes.
Number one, yes, okay. I'm like, they say I love you every day and they mean it.
Isn't that wonderful?
Right. Right, because I'm sure we can think of situations where you just say it, rote, and you don't mean it. But that's the first one. Number two is they kiss one another passionately for no reason.
Oh.
I see some women in long-term marriages, especially when children are involved, they say, I don't want to kiss my husband passionately because then he's going to construe that as an invitation to sex, and
yeah.
I might not be
yeah.
in the mood for that, right? So it's a matter of rewriting those expectations and say, I just want to
yes.
kiss, just FYI.
Yes.
I'm not in the mood to have sex, but I would like to kiss you, right?
Yes. Yes.
So that's the second one. The third is they give surprise romantic gifts. And
wonderful.
These don't need to be expensive.
Yes.
These don't need to be expensive. A card, a crossword puzzle.
Yes.
I made my partner a crossword
yes.
puzzle. For
yeah.
our anniversary, just you know, on graph
right.
paper, and he said it was the
yeah.
nicest gift that I'd ever
yeah.
I'd ever given. number four is that they know what turns their partners on and off erotically.
Yes,
and this is huge, as you can imagine,
it
and it involves some soul searching.
And let me just also say, people don't ask each other specific details often about what they like and don't like physically.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times they don't. People just assume, oh, you know, he's been with me. He knows what I like. No, it's a conversation. And people usually just
Absolutely.
Don't have it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they don't have it.
Well, and sometimes, you know, I'll ask women, what do you like? And they don't even know what they like.
They don't even know.
Right?
Okay. Yes.
Well, once they sit and think about it, you know, how do you like to be touched on your body? Which is why
yes.
I go through some of these exercises with them. Because
yes.
if you don't know what you like, you can't express what you like.
That's true. That is.
But you're absolutely right. We're not having these conversations. And just
yes.
and some other research by Gottman says that for folks who are able to have conversations about sex outside of the bedroom with their partner, just
yes.
off the bat, they report 50% of people report being in satisfying relationships. For those
Great.
Who don't talk about sex outside of the bedroom, that number goes down to 9%.
Wow.
So
right.
just
so
talking, just being
is
able to.
Yes.
It is. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Communication is everything. But again, no one's teaching us how to have these conversations.
Right.
But the research shows that just being able to have the conversations is going
yes.
to increase the satisfaction in your relationship overall by 4 times. So
yes. Great.
Yeah. So so the fifth one,
or number five,
is
I think,
that
yes.
number five is they
yes.
are physically affectionate even in public.
Yes.
Even in public.
Yeah.
Number six is they keep playing and having fun together. So the number one predictor of longevity in couples is having new experiences together.
Yes.
They looked at couples who've been together the longest who are still happy, right? Who are still satisfied.
Yes.
And that's the biggest thing. And we forget how to play as grown-ups.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
So you got to play, have fun.
Yes.
Number seven is they cuddle. And
yes.
did you know that only 6% of non-cuddlers have a good sex life? Only 6%.
Well, makes sense to me. Right?
Start cuddling. It's
yes.
getting cold.
Yes.
It's winter. Start cuddling.
Yes. Yes.
Number eight is they make sex a priority, not the last item of a long to-do list.
Yes, yes.
Which this is huge. I always
yes.
say, you know, you can't enjoy sex if you view it as a chore and view sex as an escape from your to-do list, a place you go,
yes.
right?
Yes. And I hate to say that, unfortunately, I'm going to say we women are notorious for that, to see it as a duty. As opposed to a joy, you know, that you get to have. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I think this is the perfect place for a break. Please join us after the break when ex-district attorney, educator, and women's intimacy coach, Rena Martin, will talk more about creating a loving and emotionally intimate relationship with oneself and enjoying shameless sex. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Spiritual Principles for Emotional Healing, and I am your host, Dr. Denise Johnson. And the excellent topic for today's show is Intimacy is a Woman's Birthright, Creating a Loving and Emotionally Intimate Relationship with Oneself, and Enjoying Shameless Sex. And my guest is ex-district attorney, educator, and women's intimacy coach, Rena Martin. I would like to caution you about today's topic because it may not be suitable for children.
You know, I can talk till I'm blue in the face about all the benefits of having sex for your relationship, just for yourself, your body.
Yeah.
But I would be negligent to not mention what happens if you don't make sex a priority. And I don't want to be doom and gloom here, Dr. Denise, but
okay.
The reality is this. The infidelity gap, meaning men's infidelity versus women's infidelity, is closing. So men, 60% of men will cheat on their spouses.
Okay.
And it used to be that only about 30% of women did. Right now,
okay,
it's 50% of women, and year by year, more and more women are doing it. So
wow.
Part of this is, yes, how am I going to improve my relationship if we make sex a priority? But I also, I would have people consider, what's at stake if we don't make this a priority?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
What's at stake? Because the numbers don't lie.
I agree.
So, and I don't want to use scare tactics here, but it's important for people to understand what's at stake is perhaps the integrity of your family, especially if you have kids.
Yes.
I mean, so yes, it's going to find a way to make itself a priority. Sex will find a way to make itself a priority if you don't make
yes.
it a priority first.
I agree.
So, yeah. Number 9 is they stay good friends.
Yes.
There was a study out of UCLA that looked at couples with children where both parents had careers, so dual career
mm-hmm.
couples.
Okay.
And those couples spent only about 35 minutes together every week in conversation.
Wow.
And most of their talk was about errands and tasks that they had to get
yes.
done.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So staying good friends.
Yes.
Number 10 is that they can talk comfortably about their sex life. And I think we already kind of touched on this.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, number 11 is they have weekly dates. And,
yes.
again, these don't have to be elaborate, expensive. I know childcare can be an issue for folks, but even if it's just a half an hour of carved out time for you two, they're important.
Yes.
Number 12 is they take romantic vacations. Again, these don't need to be expensive,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Yes. And lastly, the last building block here, is that they are mindful about turning toward And you might be asking yourself, what the heck does that mean? Turning toward what, right? A bid for connection. And a bid is just any attempt from one partner to the other for attention, affirmation, affection, or any positive connection. And they can show up in simple ways like a smile or a wink or more complex ways like asking for advice or help. So, you know, a nice example is you're sitting on the couch next to your partner and he or she is looking at their phone and laughs about something. And you turn and say, oh my gosh, is there something funny going on? Like, instead of just ignoring it, right? Like, and being a part of their life.
Right.
But just acknowledging these small bids. And so that is really, that's a huge one. So those are the lucky 13 right there for you.
I love those. I love those. They're wonderful. So then let me ask, what are the roles of healing from trauma, mindfulness, and radical self-love in terms of improving intimacy?
Right. So healing from trauma, imagine you've broken your arm, and your arm's in a cast, right? And eventually the cast is removed, but do you know how to use your arm again, right?
Right.
So the idea is that you get to the point where you can understand that the trauma, the abuse that happened to you wasn't your fault, right? You've processed through it, but now what do you do? How do you go out and reintegrate sex into your life if it's been the source of trauma for you? You start saying no to small things to send a signal to your brain that your no has value and that people can honor your no. And these are small things just outside of the bedroom, just practicing your no. Allow yourself to experience pleasure that is non-sexual to begin. So, you know, going for massages, take a hot shower and just enjoy and savor where the water is touching your body, right? And then once we actually bring sex into this, typically it's creating situations where you are restaging and you are in control. So I was working with a woman recently who had suffered a lot of I'm going to call it spousal rape because that's essentially what it was in her last relationship. So non-consensual with her partner. And she had met this new great person who she was seeing, and she said, Rena, every time we start to get intimate together, I just break down and I start crying. And so we went in and dissected it a little bit. I said, okay, well, let's get specific. When does it happen? And she said, it happens either when he starts undressing me or when we're in, when I'm in missionary position and he's on top of me. And it turned out that that missionary was how her ex used to abuse her. So what she did is she told her new partner, you know, we talked through this and she told her new partner, okay, ground rules have changed. And from now on, and not forever, not forever, but from now on, can I just be the one to remove my own clothes? And can we take missionary off the table for a little bit? And then they they had some fun looking up, you know, all these creative sexual positions. And you know how long it took for her to actually be totally fine with missionary? It took about 2 weeks.
Isn't that fascinating?
She, 2 weeks. And all it was is her sending new data to her brain to create those new neural pathways that say you are in control of your body. You get to have agency now.
Well, I think this is the perfect place for a break. Please join us after the break when ex-district attorney, educator, and women's intimacy coach, Rena Martin, will talk more about creating a loving an emotionally intimate relationship with oneself and enjoying shameless sex. Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Spiritual Principles for Emotional Healing, and I am your host, Dr. Denise Johnson. And the excellent topic for today's show is Intimacy is a Woman's Birthright, Creating a Loving and Emotionally Intimate Relationship with Oneself, and Enjoying Shameless Sex. And my guest is ex-district attorney, educator, and women's intimacy coach, Rena Martin. I would like to caution you about today's topic because it may not be suitable for children.
And the other thing that what you're saying reminds me of is I think that we still have most people who are ignoring their trauma and trying to pretend that it doesn't exist. And that's what they always say. Well, you know, that's in the past. I'm just going to try to move forward. But the reality is that those significantly hurt feelings and anger and fear, they're still in there. And like you're saying, yeah. Anything that reminds the body of the situation that was traumatic is going to re-trigger them. And it mm-hmm. doesn't matter how much you love this current partner or how sweet and kind this current partner is, the body will be triggered by things that are negative memories for it. Right. And so it's imperative to heal from the trauma and to process through it so that, like you're saying, you can now, you're free to do something different, to experience something different physically even.
Exactly. And that's the thing that, you know, the body keeps the score, right?
Yeah.
And it's saying, okay, because your brain and your body are doing exactly what they are designed to do, which is protect you, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
If you've had years worth of input that say when you're laying on your back with your clothes off, you're going to get hurt, then of course
yes.
your brain is going to send you into a trauma response, whether that's freeze,
yes.
you know, flee, fight, or fawn.
Right.
So, but the only way to change that, because you can try to read your way or therapy your way out of it. The only way to change it, though, is opposite action, is to give your brain new data to say, nope, this is a stick, it's not a snake.
Yeah.
Right? But who's telling people how to do the thing, the action steps? And that's really where we can come in together. I had another client who had suffered sexual abuse as a teenager. She's a former professional athlete and had suffered abuse at the hands of a coach for years.
Oh,
and she could not, she didn't even like to be touched by men at this point. And there was a particular part on her body, her thighs, because he would always touch her legs, that she was very sensitive around. And so we did some guided somatic work of just her being able to touch her own legs.
Yeah.
And right, and creating a new home in her body. And I'm thrilled to say that now she is having some of the most adventurous and fun sex she's ever had. But we had to start there, is her just feeling safe in her body again before we can start throwing Band-Aids on this, you know, go buy this toy, go do that. Like you need to feel at home in your own body.
Right.
So
right.
for every woman, it's going to be unique, right?
Yes, you're right. And I love that you're bringing out the point that a lot of times the trauma work does include body work as well. I mean, you just can't cognitively talk about the trauma over and over and over again without doing something that's going to soothe and calm the body.
Right.
You know, they both need to be done at the same time. So I appreciate
Absolutely.
You putting that out for us. Now, I'm going to tell you, I was fascinated by the idea of mindfulness when it comes to improving intimacy. So what types of techniques or what exactly is that?
Right. So the research has shown that when you ask women to think back of any sexual encounter they've had where they felt their best, that you felt that was great sex, right?
Okay.
Where it was wonderful, we were connected, it was pleasurable.
Okay.
The one common thread is that they felt fully present.
Okay.
Fully in sync and fully there during the encounter.
Yes.
Because when we can be totally present, the worries about what's going to happen or noticing how we look, right? There's a term for this spectatoring, which is, oh my gosh, is he going to see my rolls or my stretch marks, all that. They fade.
Yes.
And, you know, Esther Perel, she says, sex isn't a thing you do, it's a place you go. And so as far as, okay, how do I do this? I like to equate mindfulness during sex kind of like meditation. So your brain's going to start to wander, just like meditating, right? Your mind's going to wander. But with meditation, they say, just come back. Whenever it wanders, that's okay. Don't judge it.
Yes.
Just come back to the breath.
Yes.
So when it comes to sex, and again, when I'm saying sex, I don't necessarily mean intercourse. It can be any kind of sex. Since I know we've got people who aren't doing that, but any kind of physical intimacy, I say focus back on exactly where you're feeling pleasure on your body. Whenever your mind wanders, just focus back, okay, where is he or she touching me, right? Where am I feeling pleasure? And just bring back that practice. And yes, your mind is going to wander. And just like with meditation, bring it back to the pleasure. Because for women, our orgasm and our arousal is directly linked to our brain. And if we are distracted or anxious or focusing on how we look, it's going to press right down on our brakes. So it's a matter, and also looking outside of the bedroom and saying, when am I the most mindful? How can I incorporate some of that into the bedroom? Am I the most still and calm when there's music playing? Am I the most still and calm when there's no clutter around, right?
Yes.
And thinking back to that, but just creating a mindfulness practice outside the bedroom too, whether that's meditation or journaling, that kind of thing, giving yourself an opportunity to understand what it even means to sit still, so that you can then start doing that in the bedroom. But for me, Dr. Denise, biggest hack, easiest hack is if your mind starts wandering, just focus back on the pleasure. Focus back on where you're being touched. Yeah.
Yes. I love that. I love that because, again, you know, there has to be an integration of mind, body, and I heard you use the word soul before. And, you know, to me, mindfulness integrates all of those. At the same time. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's so powerful. It's not one over the other. We're trying to integrate all three. So I love that. I love that. And also,
particularly,
go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was going to say if you are a trauma survivor and you need an additional, you know, mantra, for example, something that you can say to yourself in the moment, a nice one is that was then and this is now.
Yes.
Right. If you find yourself tensing up, obviously, if you're being triggered, capital T triggered,
right,
you need to take care of yourself and stop and, you know, raise the flag and say, like, we need to take a pause. But if you need something to repeat to yourself just to center again, that was then, this is now, is a nice place to go with that.
Excellent. Excellent. And then the other concept you talked about was radical self-love. So how does that fit in with intimacy?
Yeah, so there's this idea that, well, once I can learn how to love myself, right? But there's a writer named Sonia Renee Taylor, and she talks about this notion of radical self-love, which is the idea that when we were born, we came into this world loving our bodies, loving ourselves.
Right.
As kids, we're fascinated. As babies, we're fascinated with our bodies, right?
Yes, that's true.
We're not insecure. We think that we are the coolest, most interesting beings on the face of the earth.
Yes.
And what happens? So I like to think of it as we start getting shrouded in layers of crap, whether that's, you know, messaging or you know, cultural messaging, media, all these things, toxic relationships. And so it's this idea of connecting back to that pure love that you were born with, that we were all born with.
Yes.
And some people will say, well, I just want to accept myself. I say, I think we can do better than that, because we'll accept a lot of things, right? If we're starving, we're going to accept a ham sandwich from 7-Eleven, but do we love the ham sandwich? I think we can go better than self-acceptance. I think we can get to self-love.
I love that. I do.
So that's how that plays in.
I mean, because the reality is, when you can love yourself, it shifts everything, I'm going to say, in your energy, in your intent, the way you see things, the way you see yourself. It shifts when there is self-love. It's very important. I love that.
Yeah.
I love
that. Because our relationships, they can be fleeting. And when you get to that point, and I know exactly when I got to that point of like, wow, I don't just like being with me. I love being with me. I remember that exact moment when it happened to me. And that changed everything for me, because I knew that regardless of what happened, if I, you know, met someone, didn't meet someone, like, I was going to be okay.
Yes, I love that.
More than okay, right?
Yes, more than okay. So I know that you've been giving us examples of clients throughout the radio show, but is there one particular person that you worked with that really stands out in terms of what they came in with and how you helped them?
Oh, gosh, there's so many.
So many, yeah.
There's so many. But one person I will speak about, she's in her, I think she just turned 50, had been married for a long time. Her kids are grown-ish. I think one's about to graduate high school and the other one's in college. And she said to me, you know, she didn't come to me for this reason, but through our work, she realized that she didn't want vanilla sex. She's actually kind of into kinky sex. And I asked her, did you ever do this with your ex-husband who you were with for decades? And she said, no, and I've been scared. I've just been scared to bring this up to anyone who I've dated, because what if they're going to judge me and think I'm weird? And she's somebody from the outside. You would look at her and you would not think this, right? Okay. Not that you can peg somebody as being kinky, but her friends, she was like, I can't tell my friends about this. Operates in a very white picket fence kind of environment.
Yes, yes.
And so we gave her tools to where she is now fully expressing her sexuality, and she will reach out to me with updates, which I love, as she's like, I can't believe it's taken me this long. I thought I'd already had the best sex in my life and that it was only downhill from here. But it just goes to show that we all have these core desires that sometimes we may not even know what they are, but if given the right tools and being able to connect with them and then taking it one step further and saying, you know, I'm worthy of pleasure.
That
can look different for every woman.
Yes.
But, you know, I already talked a lot earlier in the show about women I've worked with who are trauma survivors. She is not one of them. She just happens to be somebody who thought that mediocre sex was what you kind of have to put up with if you're a woman. And the answer is no. The answer is you do not. I've worked with so many women now who are on the verge of divorce, who come to me saying, I want to make sure I've tried every last thing I can. And the overwhelming majority of those women end up staying and then report back that they and their spouses are now having the most connected, best sex they've ever had and best communication, too.
I love that.
So even though I don't work with couples, I just work with women, I work with the individuals, it transforms their relationships, too.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, our show is about to end, and I'm going to tell you, you have been absolutely enlightening and fascinating. And I so appreciate us being able to talk about this and encouraging the women out in the audience. Like you said, it's our birthright to have intimacy and you know, to love ourselves. And you know, we are worthy, and we are worthy of exploring, you know, ourselves even in this area. So I just appreciate you, and I sure that it's going to encourage some women out there who may have been hesitant to maybe think a little bit differently about this. So thank you so much.
It is my absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me, Dr. Zuni.
All right. And if the audience would like more information, how could they contact you?
Yeah, so you can head on over to my website, which is renamartine.com, and I'll spell that out, RenaMartine.com. Or you can find me on Instagram, just look up Rena Martine, and I'll be there.
Excellent, excellent. So do you have any parting words of wisdom for the audience, for women who might be dealing with intimacy issues?
Right. You know, you weren't born knowing how to do this. No one has taught you how to do this. And that's okay. That's okay. But, and there's no shame in asking for help. And I'll just reiterate, you know, what you said, that intimacy, both physical and emotional, is your birthright. Sex is one of life's greatest joys that is absolutely free. And how many things can we say that about, Dr. Denise?
Yes.
So go out and get it. Go out and get it.
Yes. Oh, and I'll just say amen and amen.
Amen. Amen to that.
Dear Lord, Heavenly Father, I praise you and I thank you, O God, for another opportunity to speak your name. I praise you and thank you, O God, for giving us a venue in the marketplace, O God, where your name has the preeminence, O God. I thank you, O God, that we can see your spirit. We can see your life, O God, in all things. I thank you, O God, for the life of Rena Martine, O God. I thank you, O God, that from her difficult and challenging beginnings, oh God, you have given her the ability to now use that to speak life to others. I thank you, oh God, that those that she is working with, oh God, are going to experience a level of healing and intimacy and that they have never obtained before, that is going to be beyond their wildest dreams, oh God. I speak over every other woman and person out in the audience today, oh God, who has suffered from the scourge of childhood sexual abuse, oh God, or even sexual abuse as an adult, oh God. I thank you, oh God, that we can speak life over that situation and circumstance, oh God, that you would give them the ability to heal from the trauma, to heal from the pain, to heal from the limits that those things taught them about themselves, oh God. I speak to shame, oh God. I curse shame at the root and I command it to dry up in your name, oh God. And I thank you that in its place is going to be freedom and abundance and love and peace and joy and the ability to experience intimacy with themselves and others, oh God, the way that you meant it to be. I just want to thank you for this. I praise you for making a way for us to be healed in our emotions, just like you make a way for us to be healed physically in the natural. If there be anything else that the people in the audience stand in need of, you know I stand in agreement with them for it this day. In the name of your absolutely wonderful, adorable son, I pray. Amen.
You have been listening to Spiritual Principles for Emotional Healing, and I am your host, Dr. Denise Johnson. And this show will be available to you to listen to on my Facebook page at facebook.com/spiritualprinciplesforemotionalhealing.
And you can also hear my show on Spotify.
Because I am believing God that as you repeatedly listen to these prayers, He will heal your brokenness the same way He has used these prayers to minister to my brokenness. And lastly, I want you to always remember where your spirit leads, your emotions, power, and destiny will follow.